This hour is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Live from Macho Blue Earth, Robbins Kaplan Studios, Native Roots Radio.
We went to all the powwows when we were young. At that time, children could not dance. Only people over 50 years of age could dance. Most people do not know this, that the government forbid children to dance Indian. And that was so they could wipe out the culture of the young people, and then finally the new generation would never know what
happened. I'm a member of the American Indian Movement, and I'm from the indigenous nations of the Western Hemisphere.
We American Indians, we can be anything we want to be, except American Indians.
You were here long before any of us were here.
Buju, everybody. My name is Peggy Flanagan. Guabagani Gadikag and Jujuba. I'm from the White Earth Nation, and my family's the Wolf Clan.
There's trouble in Custer, South Dakota yesterday.
That the American Indian Movement is a very proud, continuing part of American Indian society. I thank you.
But what I tell you is that we are not backing down. We're here, we'll stand here, because we have been here for 10,000 years. We're the home team, and we're not going anywhere.
Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Ahu, Ho-Chunk Raja. Wakunjahade, Hingadena.
We have a great show today. We're going to start out with Emma Needham with the news.
Buju, hello everyone. Miigwech, and thank you for tuning in to Native Roots Radio. My name is Ogama Gnu Ikwe, which means strong golden eagle woman. The name given to me by my mother is Emma Needham. Today is Saturday, September 12th, 2020, and I'm here for Native Roots Radio with news and updates from Turtle Island this week. The Kansas primaries closed this week with much to celebrate for Native people. All four Native candidates running for office in Kansas won their primary elections Tuesday, including one who will become Kansas's youngest sitting legislator. 26-year-old and first-time candidate Christina Haswood of the Dene people won her Democratic primary with 70% of the vote. Kansas's 10th district, where Haswood won office, includes Haskell Indian Nations University. Haswood holds degrees from Haskell, Arizona State University, and the University of Kansas. Haswood told Indian Country Today that Representative Cherise Davids inspired her to run. U.S. Representative Cherise Davids, Ho-Chunk of Kansas, ran unopposed in her bid for a second term in Congress and will advance to the general election. In Kansas's 86th district, Stephanie Byers of the Chickasaw Nation won the Democratic nomination for a state House seat. If elected in November, Byers would be the first transgender woman in the state's legislature. Ponkawi Victors, Tohono O'odham, and Ponca Tribe currently serves in the Kansas House as the only Native legislator. She won the primary Tuesday in her bid for a sixth term. Other states in the U.S. are also seeing an influx of Native candidates, many of which won their primary elections. Arizona had 11 Native candidates, Michigan has one Native candidate, and Washington has five Native candidates. In addition, there are a dozen Native candidates running for Congress throughout the U.S. There are at least nine of the candidates running for House seats, and three are in Senate campaigns. Eight of the candidates are women, and five are men. Seven are Democrats, and six are Republicans. The list goes as follows. Rudy Soto of the Shoshone-Bannock Nation is running for U.S. House of Representatives in Idaho's District 1 and is a Democrat. Mark Wayne Mullen of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma is running for U.S. House of Representatives in Oklahoma for District 2 and is Republican. Eliza Martinez of the Navajo Nation is running for U.S. Senate in New Mexico under a Republican platform. Kai Kahele is Native Hawaiian and is running for the U.S. House of Representatives in Hawaii for District 2 and is a Democrat. Paulette Jordan of Coeur d'Alene is running for U.S. Senate in Idaho and is a Democrat. Yvette Harrell of the Cherokee Nation is running for the U.S. House of Representatives for New Mexico's District 2 and is Republican. Deb Haaland is Laguna Pueblo and is running for the U.S. House of Representatives in New Mexico for District 1 as a Democrat. Cherise Davids of the Ho-Chunk Nation is running for U.S. House of Representatives in Kansas for District 3 and is a Democrat. Tom Cole of the Chickasaw Nation is running for U.S. House of Representatives in Oklahoma for District 4 and is Republican. Gavin Clarkson of the Choctaw Nation is running for U.S. Senate for New Mexico and is Republican. Danae Benally of the Navajo Nation is running for U.S. House of Representatives in New Mexico's District 3 and is a Democrat. And Karen Bedoni is also from the Navajo Nation and also running for the U.S. House of Representatives in New Mexico's District 3 and is Republican. The last two candidates are running against one another for the same seat in New Mexico's District 3 in the U.S. House race. There is a Native candidate in every single district in New Mexico, and both parties are represented. While there is much to celebrate in the election realm for Natives, many of our relatives in California and the Northwest are experiencing immense tragedy as fires continue to burn in California, Oregon, and Washington. The fires are creating smoke from Los Angeles, California to Seattle, Washington. At least 19 people have died this week in Oregon, Washington, and California as the wildfires continue to rage in the western states. Dozens are still missing in Oregon, where officials are preparing for what they're calling a mass fatality incident. We know we're dealing with fire-related deaths, and we're preparing for a mass fatality incident based on what we know and the number of structures lost, Andrew Phillips, the director of the state's Office of Emergency Management, told CBS News. The long-term recovery is going to last years. More than 500,000 people, or 12% of the state's population, have fled their homes in Oregon, and mass evacuations are underway across the region. Oregon's Governor Kate Brown said that the fires have burned more than 1 million acres. On the Colville Reservation in north-central Washington, the Inchelium Complex fire has burned more than 26 square miles and is only 25% contained. The complex is made up of three fires, the Inchelium Highway Fire, Fry Fire, and the Kewa Field Fire. As of Friday morning, the complex again was only 25% contained and four structures had been damaged. The fire began Monday and quickly started burning timber and brush. Crews are focusing their efforts on protecting homes and commercial buildings and also remain focused on point protection and protecting structures as well as natural and cultural resources. While evacuations were reduced this week to levels 1 and 2, the fires continued. Level 1 evacuation means prepare to leave, and level 2 means be ready to leave at a moment's notice. For the Inchelium Highway Fire, the fire has burned roughly 10 square miles. For the Fry Fire, the fire has burned roughly 500 acres. As far as the Kewa Field Fire goes, while it was downgraded to a level 2 evacuation in the Kewa Valley earlier this week, people in the nearby Stray Dog Canyon were initially under a level 1 evacuation, but evacuation orders posted on the Colville Reservation website on September 11th indicated that this area was now upgraded to a level 3 evacuation, meaning there is a request or a local order to leave the area. That fire has burned 10,079 acres, or roughly 15.75 square miles. The Colville Reservation is accepting donations for victims and community support at this time. If you wish to send a monetary donation, please visit colvilletribes.com and click on the Active Fires link. In more local news, protests continue in Minneapolis related to the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police in May. On Friday, people converged on downtown Minneapolis to protest the request made by the officers and their defense teams as they are set to go on trial for Floyd's murder in March of 2021. Attorneys representing the men have argued against a joint trial and requested that the trial be moved outside of Hennepin County. Hennepin County Judge Peter Cahill didn't rule on either of those motions. However, Cahill disqualified four Hennepin County prosecutors, including County Attorney Mike Freeman, from participating in the case for the four former police officers charged in the death of George Floyd. According to NPR News, Judge Peter Cahill kicked the prosecutors off the case for meeting privately with the medical examiner to discuss Floyd's autopsy results. Freeman and the Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison, who is leading the prosecution, asked the judge to reconsider. Freeman defended the attorneys, saying that they acted within the Minnesota Supreme Court rules and that Cahill had taken a defense attorney memo seeking to remove the Hennepin County Attorney's Office at face value. The medical examiner meeting was, quoted by Freeman, completely routine and, if the ruling stands, would make it nearly impossible for prosecutors to obtain, understand, and introduce evidence into the case. Protester and organizer Jay Yates of the group of Twin Cities Coalition's Justice for Jamar told NPR News that the defense's request for the change of venue is to seek a wider, more conservative jury who will side with the former police officers. But the whole world saw what they did to Mr. Floyd, and the whole world is outraged, Yates says. We demand that these trials stay here, where they have to face the wrath of the communities they have terrorized. Before the hearing began, protesters staged a die-in demonstration in front of the Family Justice Center, where the hearing is being held. In additional local news, the encampment of unhoused Native community members has grown again at the Franklin and Hiawatha location, also known as the Wall of Forgotten Natives. The Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center released a statement on Facebook indicating that the relocation was the result of the city of Minneapolis closing an encampment located at 2313 13th Avenue South, or one block from the Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center headquarters. The move back to Franklin and Hiawatha, or the Wall of Forgotten Natives, clearly demonstrates the continued need for renewed and creative ideas to address the long-term homelessness concerns with the Minneapolis American Indian community, the statement read. Donations are being facilitated through the Wawakia program at the Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center and can be contacted if you wish to donate. Items needed at this time include camp chairs, cots, blankets, tarps, mittens, hats, and hand warmers. Only new donations will be accepted. Please do not send garbage, as that only slows down the donation process. Thank you and Miigwech again for tuning in to Native Roots Radio. Remember to wear your mask, wash your hands, take the census, and vote. Back to you, Wakanjahade.
Pini Gigi Emma, for all your hard work.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the Chat Now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanjahade. Each week, we try to reach out to Winona LaDuke, and she's so busy up in the deep north. I really, really appreciate you spending some time with us and our family out there. Welcome, Winona.
Thank you. Nice to visit with you, Robert.
Yeah.
So it is ricing season in the deep north, and there's something you can count on. You know, and there is wild rice. We're grateful. Mm-hmm. I just want to say, in a world full of crisis, the Ojibwe still have our rice, and we'll keep praying and keep harvesting, right?
Exactly. So there's a lot going on. We got the census we need to talk about, the vote, and then we have a character coming up there in the deep north this weekend, and also what's happening at the capital, the state capital here.
Right. So this... yesterday, I believe, on Friday, the Republican, the GOP, succeeded in ousting Commissioner Kelly from the Department of Commerce on his decision, prudent decision, to proceed in opposing Line 3 by appealing the PUC Certificate of Need to the appellate court. And what I want to say is, like, why would you, you know, chop someone's head off for doing a prudent thing for the state of Minnesota? Why would Minnesota invest in a tar sands pipeline at the expense of civil liberties and environmental protection for a Canadian multinational corporation at the end of the tar sands? That's a dumb idea. And I'm just disappointed in the lack. Well, I'm not disappointed. It's expected that there's a lack of leadership by the GOP and a lot of negative campaigning. And thank God, it's an election year, and so let's get some people out. Let's get some people out to vote. Speaking of which, it seems like we got to get more people to sign up the census. Is that right?
Yeah, really. We need their boots on the ground now, knocking on the doors these next 2 weeks, because 45 ended it a month early, which is really unconstitutional. But we have until the end of October, but he changed it to the end of September. And again, it's just like not counting us and trying to not have us vote. It's just all these things coming from the federal government. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, repression. Repression is in abundance. But remember, we come from a long history of fighting back. And so that's what we got to do. We got to get our people registered. We got to get our people signed up for the census. And then we got to keep pushing. I mean, the fact is that the whole world is in chaos and the West Coast is burning.
Yep.
You know, there is crises of monumental and biblical proportions everywhere. So I say, get out the vote, plant your food, harvest your food, you know, be thoughtful and be mindful. And so, you know, we're looking at, you know, you're saying 7% of the people up at Red Lake signed up for did the census. We need to get more people in that. And then the next, you know, and then the next round is there's some really great get out the vote stuff starting to roll. And, you know, I just keep thinking what we got to say is like, hopefully our lieutenant governor, you know, she should just appeal to the people of White Earth and say, hey, I'm Peggy Flanagan. I'm Lieutenant Governor, and I'm here because you voted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the truth, is that good people get elected if you vote. If you don't vote, you get these guys that are super, you know, backward thinking, and they're in the deep north, and they're dominating the politics, and it's time for more enlightenment in our state. So we're going to do a whole bunch of get out the vote, rock the vote, power the vote work up here on White Earth and beyond, and just really encouraging people. There's some really good Native candidates that are running for office, and we could, you know, we could have our voices and our faces out there. So, you know, Liz Jackala, Audrey Thayer, 51% of the primary in Bemidji, you know, city council, Alan Roy, secretary treasurer of White Earth, is looking pretty good. Yep. Democratic nominee, you know, running against it, you know, these guys who are super anti-Indian. So let's get out the vote. Get out the vote for our brothers and sisters and have our voices heard. So that's kind of my thinking. And then 45 coming to Bemidji. He's like 3 for 3. I mean, didn't he like, you know, first he wants to go to like Juneteenth in Tulsa,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
They burn the city, they burn the black community out, and he wants to go there. And then he's got to go to the, you know, Mount Rushmore, 4th of July, and play the 7th Cavalry, right?
Right.
So he's 2 for 2. And then 3, you want to go see the George Floyd Memorial, you know? So he's coming to Bemidji for line 3, and that pipeline is dead, and he can't make it, he can't breathe life into it. But, you know, we got to show our beauty and be present and tell that guy, number 45, he is not welcome in Indian country. That's what I say.
That's right. That's perfect. And
see you there.
Yeah, I definitely plan on coming up for this and having my little orange poster out there pointing at his direction. Well, Winona, I know you're really busy. The racing season and all the things that you have going on up there and I'll see you Friday. And thank you so much for what you do for our people.
No, thank you, Robert. We're all one team. Let's just take care of the home team and keep going, man. Hey, thanks a lot. See you on Friday.
All right. Hey, that
bye.
Was Haijuoni.
Get out the boat.
That's Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. We're really blessed to have this next guest because our relatives are in need right now, and Jace Rowe is boots on the ground over there at the Wall of Forgotten Natives, and he's an outreach worker. Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I feel very fortunate to have this platform and have you ask me to just share about what's going on over at the Wall. So thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you. I can't believe, I think last time we talked, I can't believe it's been 2 years. I thought it was just a year ago that we were dealing with this again on the Wall of Forgotten Natives, but now we're on the Wall of Forgotten Natives Part 2. And There's a process. You guys brought them over there because they were being kicked out of other places. And so it was kind of a, can you tell our audience and catch our audience up on how that process happened?
Sure. Just pretty briefly, there was a encampment behind Indigenous People's Task Force over on Southside, a couple blocks off of Franklin. And that campsite there was deemed unsafe for people to be at. There was a lot of drug use, a lot of dealing. There was some gunfires at night, and there is a place where, I mean, it's around where people live. So it needed to be moved. So I can agree with that. However, the way it was done, it just wasn't done the correct way, in my opinion, because there was no clear path on where the relatives could go. So it just got brought up. I don't even know how it got brought up or who brought it up, but it was suggested that we go back to the wall and to take that back and to draw some attention to the fact that we still have a lot of relatives living in the streets, you know? So, so it didn't take much, and everybody just said, okay, let's head on over to the wall and get those 10 tents up so it can be considered an encampment and we can stay there. So that all unfolded, and that took a good day of fighting and keeping that land for us and letting them know this is Indian land and we have a right to this land. We have no place else to go. And I personally am tired of shuffling off clients from place to place to place, from campsite to campsite to campsite, only to tell them later that they got to go. And hopefully we can find them and continue our services and continue offering them services and getting them help. So every time we displace a camper, we're interrupting their services with the service provider that may be helping them. So it's really complicated, but yeah, we've been over there now. What has it been now, Robert? Like 3 weeks, I want to say, or 2 or 3 weeks?
Two weeks.
Okay.
Wednesday.
So it feels like three, I can tell you that.
Exactly.
I can let you know though, since then, we have made a lot of progress. We have worked with other agencies. I work for Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, and we have a new CEO, and her name is Melissa Cummings. Mm-hmm. And she is she's taking this head on, and she kind of got placed into this role, and then she found out that, hey, two of her outreach workers were part of this movement, and we are now at the wall. yeah. And our supervisor left for a week for a vacation. And my coworker, Jenny, she came back, and before she left, she told us not to get in trouble and to stay calm. And when she came back, we had to tell her, well, we took over the wall again, and we're out there every day. So everybody at the agency has been pitching in and hopping into action. Getting together, we have a teepee that has been set up outside of the wall, and we have daily meetings Monday through Friday at 1 o'clock for service providers or anybody in the community that wants to know what's going on. Mm. We can let them know, kind of give them an update, a daily update about what's happening and the future plans of the camp, just so everybody's on the same page. And that's a little different from the last time that the wall was there. Right. The last time the wall was there, as a service provider, I was told not to enter the wall. We were turned away at the entrance. Towards the end, we were really turned away. Mm-hmm. Here, we're making it an atmosphere of, hey, you're a service provider. What can you do for our relatives? What can you do that is culturally specific for our relatives too, right? Because that's going to work the best, in my opinion. So it's getting the service providers lined up and having everybody on the same page and everybody basically saying, hey, nobody does really own this wall, but I can let you know that the workers at MIWRC have been there every day. Mm-hmm. Boots on the ground, getting services out. We numbered all the tents. I was able to number them, and I got up to 72, I believe, was Whoa. The count. On Wednesday.
Wow.
We have been telling campers that, hey, we are full. We still have COVID, right?
Right.
So we need to be aware of that. The campers are very aware of that. We have a lot of people bringing masks. We have hand sanitizing solution at both entrances. And we also have had nighttime security since we started, and that's been provided by Mike Forsha and his crew They came down right away and offered, what can we do? And I personally, I can't stay there all night, and none of the workers really can. And I said, we need to keep our people safe. Can you help out with that? He jumped into action. He's been there every night.
Wow.
Him and his crew have been there every night, and it's been really amazing. I can let you know that the campers have come up to me and said, I really like that Mike guy. I like that Mike guy. He stops everybody and he takes time to listen to us. And really, at the end of the day, that's all our relatives want down there, is to be seen and to be heard. A lot of the times they get pushed away and we stigmatize them in the community, you know, because they're homeless, and that's wrong, because those are our grandmas and those are our aunties, those are our cousins, our sisters, our brothers down there. So I think keeping that in mind is on the forefront. And what I tell everybody, you know, don't come in trying to save people, because we're not trying to save people. We're trying to help people. And on that note, I can give an update. There was an announcement this past week that Avivo and also Red Lake are going to be helping move campers on Tuesday.
Wow.
This Tuesday, we have 40 openings in a hotel in Coon Rapids.
Wow.
And they would be brought out to Coon Rapids and given a room, and then offered services and by Avivo and other service providers. I'm sure they'll have a schedule set up, but they can help them with housing, and they can help them with getting in a treatment or whatever their goals are.
Right.
That's the plan. And if it goes well on Tuesday, we will continue. And I believe I can't remember the specific amount of beds. I do apologize, but it's a good amount. I want to say it's like a total of 120.
Wow.
And that really would get a lot of the camp situated and into shelter this week. Our goal, our dream would be to be able to close the wall back up this week.
Wow.
And it's great. It's amazing. That's a great goal.
Mm-hmm.
However, we are also planning, if it doesn't work out like that, I've been talking to MnDOT. We are putting up some privacy shields against the highway there, because a lot of people will stop and stare at the relatives like they're on display. So we are working with MnDOT, and that's supposed to happen on Monday or Tuesday. We also have decided to split up the camp half and half, just for security reasons. And MnDOT came out also, and it will be installing a fence kind of halfway through where the Nod tent last a couple years ago was.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's going to be the cutoff point. And that way we can have security at both ends of this entrance provided by MIWRC or another agency. And it will be more secure at night. If that Tuesday doesn't go as hopefully as well as we're planning, because I will mention, you know, it is in Coon Rapids.
Right.
It is kind of displacing a lot of people from their services in South Minneapolis. So there might be some pushback. However, it is a warm place, and there are going to be services there to help them. So we're hoping to get everybody moved, but we'll, like I said, we'll see on Tuesday. Other than that, as far as like any other help that the community can do, I would say just visit www.miwrc.org. There is our website. And like I said, MIWRC has really stepped up and really helped organize and provide on-the-ground support. We're storing donations inside of MIWRC in the gym and checking in with the camp daily and bringing donations over as needed, just because for safety reasons, what we have found out that if we have a tent full of donations in the camp, that is an extra stress on the nighttime security. And it's just, we want to make it as safe as possible and still be providing everything, all the needs that the campers need in a safe, secure way too for our workers. So I know there were some questions about donations, and that's kind of what's happening with the donations now.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, Tuesday, I think it's going to be very telling. We'll have a really clear idea of where the campers are going to go and what the general feel is. Because we can go around and ask campers all day if they want to move on Tuesday. Do you want to do this?
Right.
And some of them can say, yeah, great. And then come Tuesday, I don't really want to do that. You know, so I'm being cautiously optimistic about this. But hopefully we'll see it. And that would be a great start and a great move of clearing out that camp before winter. That's really where we're at. We've had a lot of people show up and drop off. Like, we've had a couple cords of wood there.
Mm-hmm.
I know Marion from Simpson Housing, they have shown up and provided food and meals on the ground. Southside Harm Reduction has been there providing on-the-ground support. Narcan, wow. Talking to people. So has NAC. NAC has been there. NAC-D has been there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of great community support within our own community has really shown up and donated, you know, a couple hours here, a couple hours there. And it's been very helpful to us on the ground to get that support because, it's a lot of work, but at the same time, when you're doing it, it doesn't feel like work. You're just helping the community. You're with your relatives. You know, you see grandma, you see your cousin, you're like, hey, how's it going? And it's almost like you're having a conversation. You're having a conversation. And that's what I love about it. It's, mm-hmm. it is a community, you know, and I think that once people get over maybe their own stigma in their head and their fear,
mm-hmm.
and if they can come down and do it in a COVID safe way and just talk to relatives and be there and offer help and assistance and just a face of hope, I think that says a lot, you know, just seeing community down there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and let's see, as far as donations, can I also just say, please, if you are donating, can you please, if you can, new or gently used items are best.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if they are washed, we don't have any way to wash clothes. We don't want dirty clothes. We don't want people just going through their closets and just grabbing worn out items. Because what does that say to our relatives when we're bringing them dirty clothes or we're bringing them food that's almost spoiled? You know what I'm saying? Like people brought in fruit and it like literally their oranges were moldy.
Ugh.
I had to bring it out right out to the trash and I didn't want the relatives to see that because to me, that just sends a whole nother message to them. Like they are, you know, worthless or mm-hmm. not as good as getting, you know, fresh fruit, you know? So items like that, please be aware that we need to watch that. And it is going to people. If you wouldn't give it to your grandma or mm-hmm. you wouldn't give it to your elders or your children, don't give it to us.
Right.
We don't want it either, you know? So, but we do appreciate the donations, you know?
Well,
just,
thank you.
Just be mindful.
Yeah, thank you so much for this update, Jace Rowe, outreach worker, mm-hmm. The Wall of Forgotten Natives. Thank you so, so much, Peeny Geegee, for what you do and all the organizations. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Each week we have a great update from House Representative Mary Kunish Podine. Let's take a listen.
How matake yape. Good evening. It is State Representative Mary Kunish Podine, candidate for Senate in District 41B. I want to wish you all a very solemn September 11th, 2020. We all know what this date is. 19 years ago, we experienced the terrorist attack on the Twin Towers and the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and it certainly had a long-reaching effect on all of us. And so I want to just take a minute and recognize all of those folks that we lost those 19 years ago in the Twin Towers, all of the firefighters and emergency folks that came to the rescue, and the way New York pulled together with such strength and resiliency and compassion and the generosity across the nation as they dealt with what they had there. And so I hope we all take a minute and recognize the fact that there are consequences to action. Each one of us, there is a reaction to our actions. And if we react in a negative way, that is going to expand that negativity. If we can find a way to react in a positive manner, that's only going to make it better for all of us. And so on this September 11th, 2020, I ask you all to think for a minute about how you can make a positive reaction to what seems to be challenges and negativity all around us, whether it's the pandemic, whether it's the civil unrest, whether it is addiction and chemical dependency, whether it is the fact that we've all been, you know, in close quarters now for months and months on end, whether it's school, how many of you are finding yourself now as basically the teachers of your children in your home? I finished this past week of school as a library media specialist in Robbinsdale Middle School, trying to make sure that every family, every kid had a Chromebook to use or some device to use, as well as access to the internet. And that means that families at home are going to have to help those students and ensure that they are getting online and connecting with their friends online, with their teachers online. It's one of those times where we all have to pull together once again. And so I know Robert started just finished his first week of school. I just finished my first week of school. We've got many weeks ahead of us. But again, if we do this together, we will have what I hope is a good outcome. We might not have scores. We might not have all taught or learned what we would have in a typical school year. But you know what? That's okay. We're all going to survive it. We're all going to grow older. We're all going to rebuild our economy and our communities. And if we keep that positive attitude, then I'm pretty sure we can do it. And as Indigenous communities, we are always struggling a little bit harder than the usual. And so once again, let's reach out and see how we can take care of each other best in our communities and in our families. I try to think of what I wanted to talk about with you today, and I received from my sister. I have a sister that is an Indian law lawyer, and she's out at in Boulder, Colorado now at NARF, Native American Rights Fund. And she sent me this very interesting link to presidential candidate questionnaire, and it's all about agriculture and farms. You know, this is the season of harvest. We depend on our farmers and our agricultural production to keep us, our tummies full, keep us healthy and all of those things. And this questionnaire was really quite interesting. I found a recent piece of information around Native Americans and agriculture. And it seems that our American Indians are kind of getting back into that agricultural mode once again. Maybe we didn't have nice, neat rows and farmed quite the way the colonizers did, but we all had our systems of collecting the bounty of the earth this time of year to sustain us through a often very cold, harsh winters. And so I found this piece of information that according to the Indian Health Service, our Native American population in the USA has a life expectancy that is 5.5 years less than the country's general population, which is really a sad statistic. And we know that diabetes, heart disease, chemical dependency, smoking, all of those things contribute to that shortened lifespan. But also, in addition to all of those things, high rates of poverty and hunger, that really contributes to at least 50% of the folks who are diagnosed with coronary heart disease. And that means that oftentimes American Indians are 3 times more likely to be diagnosed with diabetes. I know my mom, her sisters, they all had serious diabetes, and our generation was really sensitive to that and have made really better choices, let's say, especially around finding good nutritional related ways to address those genetic and those historic health issues. But one way, and a local way, farming is a farm called Oh, where is it? Now I'm looking for Dream of Wild Health. And it, the Dream of Wild Health is a nonprofit agency, and it's dedicated to reconnecting American Indian people in the Twin Cities area, here in the metro area, to traditional food and medicine and our traditional lifestyle. And it grows a lot of fresh produce in Hugo, Minnesota. And not only are they teaching our American Indian folks about good, strong nutrition and growing all of those wonderful items, but they also maintain a native seed collection. And they provide more education around traditional crops and how that works. And I find that to be absolutely fascinating. And what's really great is that I believe that this Dream of Wild Health has actually tripled in size, especially during this pandemic, because they were able to buy more land and put together more produce, and folks are loving it. Folks are absolutely wanting to learn more, to have that kind of connection back to the land, and they want to be able to grow or eat, you know, those kind of products again. And I know that at one time I did some small teaching around agriculture and gardening, urban gardening, especially for kids. And we did the three sisters. We, you know, talked about how different plants really work with each other on the issue of supporting each other. And, you know, of course, there's good lessons in that. And so this article that I wanted to show you about, or talk to you about, the questionnaire around agriculture with the president. So we know that this COVID pandemic certainly has awakened many Americans, not just our Native Americans, to the realization that stocked grocery shelves cannot and should not be taken for granted. That and toilet paper, I guess. And so our farmers and the ranchers across the nation experienced really incredible losses as that food supply chain adapted to the changing demands and the pandemic impacts. And so we have to make sure that we have reliable food supplies and that the prices are stable, especially at this critical time during the pandemic. And there was a question, there's a bunch of questions, especially around the farm policy program. And the question set, one of the questions was, as president, how would you be a proponent for enhancing farm policy programs to bring certainty to farm and ranch families through crop insurance, improved risk management programs, and support for beginning farmers and ranchers, while also bringing much needed funding to trade development and agriculture research? And candidate Joe Biden, Democrat candidate Joe Biden, recognized that crop insurance and risk management tools are incredibly important to farmers, especially in light of the most recent storms, especially in Iowa, the fires out west, the drought in the Midwest, Hurricane Laura in Texas and Louisiana, and recognizing how important the role of crop insurance plays, and make sure that there are safety nets for those that need it. He also said that we need to strengthen our agricultural sector by pursuing a trade policy that works best for American farmers. And Donald Trump, the Republican candidate, reminded us that he supported and signed the 2018 Farm Bill, and that they will work expeditiously to implement critical legislation. Well, they've had 4 years to do that, 2 years since that farm bill, which really wasn't all that powerful. And it says that they've implemented several of the new programs in the 2018 farm bill, and that includes the dairy margin coverage program that helps our dairies across the country, They worked on regulations to support the burgeoning hemp industry, which is something that a lot of our Native communities are looking at, reservations. I know there's a fellow, Joe, out in California that is really pushing that. And so how can we support that hemp industry? And so, once again, it's so important that we inform ourselves around the candidates. In just a week, we're going to be able to start voting early. So I hope that you are all sending in your application for an early ballot. If you don't plan to vote in person, you can vote in person early, and then, of course, on November 3rd. So I'm wishing you all a happy weekend. Take care of everybody, everyone, everybody. And I will speak with you next week. Wopula Tonka.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cook, didn't cut a deal.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. This show is dedicated to those who give back and fight back for our people. We are the resistance. We are awake. All things are our relatives. What we do to everything, we do to ourselves. All is one, Black Elk. I want to introduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy Pilot. Wendy has been an animal advocate for many years. She's a volunteer Minnesota State Council member for the Humane Society of the United States, and she works on animal issues at the state level. Wendy, thank you so much for talking about our sacred animals each week. It's really eye-opening, and they are our relatives, so I want to tell us your name and welcome.
Thank you. My name is Hanajihi Hani, and that means cares for them, and I was given that name by my Daga, Curtis. And I always like to thank him every week for that name.
Yeah, it's a great name.
You know, being an animal advocate for a long time now really sometimes is heart-wrenching, right? And heartbreaking, because there are so many horrible things out there that happen to animals. So when something good happens and we have victories, we really, really want to celebrate them, even if they're small victories. But I have a big victory right now.
Cool.
And I'm going to be reading from, it's called A Humane World. And I've read from this before. This is Kitty Block's blog. And Kitty Block is the president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. And this blog was just dated yesterday, so September 11th. And here we go. Breaking news from Washington State. I used to live there, Robert.
I've heard a few stories.
So just a quick side note. I lived in Washington State like in 1984 for like a year. It was like no big deal. But it really, that year really had a big impact on my life. So anytime Washington State comes up, I say, I used to live there.
Yeah, you refer to it a lot.
I do.
It must have been a turning point in your life.
It was. Believe me, it was. But anyway, that's another story in another day. But so Washington State becomes the seventh U.S. state to outlaw wildlife killing contests. And I'm really excited about this. So it's the seventh state. Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission voted 7-2 to pass a rule ending this gruesome spectacles where participants kill large numbers of wild animals simply for the thrill and for the cash and prizes. The new rule prohibits contests for animals like coyotes, bobcats, crows, foxes, and raccoons. And I've also read other places where they kill squirrels, prairie dogs, all kinds of animals. And this is a significant, as these animals typically have few protections under the state law and are the most common victims at such contests, where winners are decided based on who kills the most or the heaviest or the smallest animals. In Washington, for instance, contestants killed at least 1,427 coyotes between 2013 and 2018 during events that offered prizes for killing the smallest dog. And we had one here in Minnesota not too long ago, a
you
couple of years
them,
ago. Yeah.
Them up.
Usually like they're by the bar, like they have a sponsored, thank you, sponsored by a local bar. They're giving cash prizes. They're giving even rifles. Sometimes the prize will be like an A-15 rifle, a gun, right? These people come and they shoot randomly, you know, without any limit of the number of animals, and they just go ahead and killed it. So
it's just crazy. As people are listening to this, it's like our beans, our relatives, and just randomly, it's such a colonized thing just to randomly go out and kill things.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And they're not using the animals for meat or anything. They may sell the pelts for, you know, coats and stuff. But anyway, it's just horrible. The ban in Washington is the latest in a string of victories against wildlife contests nationwide in recent years, and it shows that both concerned citizens and wildlife management officials no longer have the stomach for these vile events. The Humane Society of the United States has been on the front lines of this fight, turning red-hot spotlight on the problems with undercover investigations of wildlife contests in the states of Oregon, New York, New Jersey, and Maryland, working with other organizations, wildlife advocates, and other dedicated volunteers. We have helped ban such contests. And here's the other states: Arizona, California, Colorado, Massachusetts, New Mexico, and Vermont. So now Washington State is added to that and is the seventh state. And I'm really happy about it.
That's good. Maybe you can have a hobby as a retirement there for Minnesota.
I'm going to be trying to work on a lot of things once I'm retired for animals here in Minnesota. So I'm excited about that because, working full time and doing other things is really hard. But there's supporters who think that these killing contests are okay. And they rationalize this blood sport by claiming that by randomly killing coyotes, they are protecting livestock, right?
Oh, come on.
Or saving deer for the hunters.
Is that all they got?
That's all they got. But that argument, as we know, is based on falsehoods. Far more cattle and sheep deaths are caused by weather, birthing problems, and disease. And deer abundance is determined by the availability of good habitat. Scientists and state wildlife agencies have also stated time and time again that wildlife killing contests provide no credible wildlife management service and can make problems worse by disrupting, thank you, stable breeding structures, increasing conflicts with leading to an increase in numbers of the animals who are targeted at the events. So what do these contests do? What do they do? They promote sadistic notion that it's fun to kill animals for chase and for prizes like cash. A lot of these contests too, I'm not going to read anymore because I can't really do that. I'm having trouble talking too, but well, let's see how it goes. A lot of these hunters, when they go out there, they're using calls. Like they have like whistles that will sound like a coyote's baby crying, right? And it lures the animal out so that the people can shoot it. The animal will come close. They use baiting also. So they'll put like food down and stuff down to lure the animals out. And they use these high-powered rifles to kill these animals, and it's just too much.
Well, do you remember now when you called that bar? He was just kind of saying, "Unbelievable! All the people that called, one and two, that he kind of played it off as, you know, they're just coming here. I don't know how my name got on the poster and all that."
That's right. Yeah,
it was crazy.
He got hundreds of calls. This bar, I think it was down up north, right? I can't remember exactly.
I thought it was southwestern.
Oh, maybe it would have been
Minnesota.
Okay.
But anyway, so that was, you know, people that are upset, you let people know, and nobody really. If it was a sport, the animal would have a gun too and be able to fire back if it was a true sport.
Exactly, Robert. It's exactly true. So that's that, and I'm really happy about it. Do I have a minute? So I have another thing that I just read the other day that kind of brought tears to my eyes. I'm going to see if I could find it here really quick. But if I can, I'm just going to kind of apropos here.
Paraphrase.
So I'm going to paraphrase. So all the wildfires burning in California and in Oregon, and I think somewhere in Washington, that all this ash, right, is falling from the sky. And this person wrote this article saying that all this ash falling from the sky, I want you to look at this ash as the remains of our forest, of the animals that were in that forest, of the grass, of all the plants that were in the forest, of the bears that were there, the deer, the moose. And I want you to grab up some of that ash, and I want you to take it and pray on it, and you know, pray that these fires end, and to keep the animals and people safe. Because that's what that ash is. That ash that's falling from the sky all over everything is the remains of things that we loved. And we really should, you know, just keep that and pray on that. So if you're out there, take some ash and just think of it that way, that it's, you know, that ash is everything that we loved and it's gone now.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so true. Wow, Wendy, Pini Gigi, for these updates and your thoughts about our sacred animals all over Turtle Island and throughout the world, too.
Thank you, Robert. It's my pleasure.
Have a good day. And that was Wendy Pilot, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll take a short break and come right back.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the chat now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Again, my taxpayer name is Robert Pilot, and it's always really good to catch up with Robert Blake. Robert, how are you doing? And great. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, Robert. Hi, how's it going, everyone? Yeah, I'm doing great. Everything is moving along. I've been really busy. Yeah, just really excited to be back on today. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I always love catching up with you. We've had a lot of fun in the last couple of years together, and part of it's being on the radio show. And geez, I can't believe it's been over a year that we were in Iowa during the presidential forum.
Well, I think that's when everything kind of starts really kind of breaking out after that too, isn't it? Like, it's like it started happening too.
I think it was after you gave Amy Klobuchar a resist t-shirt. I think that's when it all started happening.
She was very proud of that t-shirt, by the way.
That's right. Haven't seen her wear it at any debates or anything, but that's another story, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And yeah, a lot of things did the movers and shakers and of Indian country were there, and you were there, I was there, and Jamie Edwards, our friend Jamie, he was there with his nation. And remember, Vice was following them around, not the police, but the TV show Vice. And I got into a couple camera shots there just to, you know, hanging out with Jamie. So I got on HBO too.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, man. Yeah, that was a really good time. And we met some great people. And yeah, that's pretty cool. But speaking of presidential candidates because that's what it was the Native American Presidential Forum,
right?
We have an event coming up that I'm going to be speaking with some of the other politicians here in the state of Minnesota. It's called Minnesota Climate Justice Leaders for Biden Harris, the Biden Harris campaign.
Cool.
And it's an event that's coming up here next Wednesday. It's at 7 p.m. And it's Representative Ilhan Omar, Representative Torres Ray, Chris Del Porter, just a lot of great people who are part of this climate movement here in the state of Minnesota. And we're going to be talking about, what is $1.7 trillion going to look like invested in BIPOC communities, right?
Yeah.
And how's that going to create jobs, going to create opportunities? We know that these communities are more targeted by the polluters, what's that going to do to our communities? So I'm really excited about this. 7 p.m. Wednesday, September 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a great opportunity, for us to just get out there and support Biden and the Harris ticket. And we really got to get out and vote this year. We really got to get our family. We've got to get our friends on board for us. Our future really does depend on it, Robert.
Oh, yeah. I agree so much. And, everybody's got to remember, too, with our youngsters and our elders that maybe haven't voted before, they may need help. And another thing we got to remind everyone, too, is we outnumber them. It's just that the Republicans vote every time and we sit out. So we got to get everyone engaged like they were in 2012 with the Obama-Biden ticket.
Well, absolutely. And that's why when they asked me to be a part of this panel, I jumped at the opportunity because, I just feel like this is just so important that, there's especially Native representation and also too that, we're just there to really support the Biden-Harris campaign because we just can't have four more years of this. Our future depends on this. And I feel so strongly about this election I can't sit on the bench. I don't want no one sitting on the bench.
Right.
I want us to all get out to the polls and I want us to all vote and let our voice be heard and just really just bring it. We have to bring it to the polls this year.
Yeah, we definitely do. And we're going to help as much as we can and bring it up as much as we can. Also, I just want to touch base with you too about two things. I want to talk about Solar Bear, but before we do that, let's talk a little about the census because, our Native nations are falling a little behind and we need to really, really support them and have them open the door now that people are knocking on the doors trying to get a census.
Yeah. That's another great point. I'm looking at some of these statistics, 7.2% Red Lake, 32.2% Leech Lake, 34% White. We really need to get our people out voting in the census, turning in the information because, this is about money. This is about federal dollars too.
Yep.
And this is about money that's going into our communities. And we have to get out. We have to report to the census. We have to let them know that we are still here and
right.
we do matter. And, I understand maybe some people don't feel comfortable giving their information. And I get that, but this isn't one of those things. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, this is about, getting opportunities for better transit systems for, you know, for elderly people getting, you know, better services. I mean, the list just goes on, you know, better opportunities for education for our community, for our kids.
Mm-hmm.
So please, you know, better health care, you know, this goes down the mm-hmm. you know, the just down the road of just all the things that we really need to be fighting for. And it's really simple. I think, Robert, it took me like 2 minutes to fill mine out. Like, it literally took me 2 minutes. Like, it's not that hard.
Right.
It really is not that hard. And I filled mine out, you know, mm-hmm. it was so simple. It's the simplest thing you can do.
We got to remind our relatives too out there and that aren't taking it. You need to take it because there's people that are counting on you, and you're talking about federal dollars. We're talking about politicians, and we should be getting mad because the 45 is cut it by a month, and he doesn't want us to be counted. So I think we should really reverse that on him and be counted. And it's always fun for me, Bob, to look back and look at the old census and go, wow, there's my great-great-grandfather. And then, oh, wow, that must be my great-grandfather's dad, you know, and be able to look at that. And it's a tradition, you know, and I think if you can't do it for yourself, we have to do it for other BIPOC people.
Well, you know, that's a great point, Robert. I've always loved that campaign that Peggy did when she was like, make voting a tradition, mm-hmm. you know, here in like 10 years ago or whatever that first started. I forgot when that first started. I thought that was so cool and so original.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we need to do that with the census. Make the census a tradition, just like those things that you just said. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's one of the things that we have to do in Native country is make the census a tradition. We're always going to fill it out. We're always going to be counted. We're always going to be a part of it. And I mean, I think that would be a great campaign, actually.
Right.
is to do something like that, because it is so important. And I just cannot urge, you know, our fellow Native brothers and sisters to do this, to fill this out. Please fill this out. You know, it's so important.
It is. So, hey, let's catch up a little bit about what else you're doing. And we only got a couple more minutes, but I know you're owner of Solar Bear, and then you also have a nonprofit. Can you tell our audience a little bit of our little updates on that?
Yeah. So I'm going to be speaking at the National Tribal and Indigenous Climate Conference this Thursday, September 17th. Going to be there with a bunch of other Native, you know, people that are just doing great things mm-hmm. around climate education, renewable energy. So if you can, please tune into that. Go to the Institute for Tribal Environmental Professionals. It's a group. They run it out of Northern Arizona University. You can just Google that. You'll find it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the National Tribal and Indigenous Climate Conference. We start installation on the Red Lake Project, once again,
wow.
The 200 kilowatt system this Friday. We've got Clean Energy Economy coming up, and they're going to be doing a story on Solar Bear and the wow. solar project. So I'm pretty excited about that. That's all going really good. Native Sun is the nonprofit,
mm-hmm.
and that is moving right along. We've made some really good partnerships with other people, and I'm really excited about this K-12 curriculum that we're going to be piloting in Red Lake and hopefully mm-hmm. getting out into the other tribal schools.
Wow.
So that's really exciting. And we're inching ever so closely to hopefully getting the solar project over at Little Earth finance. And
wow.
so that seems to be just keeps on growing and growing. And, you know, I'm so passionate. I'm very passionate about that project, and I want to get that done because I think it's going to be exciting, not only for the community, but also for the state of Minnesota to see that project get done and the city.
Yeah.
So, all kinds of really cool things happening around renewable energy and solar, and I seem to be right in the the tornado of it.
That's awesome. Well, Bob, we're with Robert Blake from Red Lake. I always have to put that in there one time, with Solar Bear and Native Sun and all these other great things you're doing. Thank you so much for sitting in and telling our audience what you've been up to lately. I really, really appreciate you being on. It's always a pleasure to have you on Native Roots Radio.
And once again, Robert, thank you for everything you do for our community. We need you, sir. And thank you so much for just being that voice for our community. We love you, man. And love everybody else. Miigwech.
Pinigi, thank you for those kind words. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Each week we reach out to Nancy Bolio, who's a warrior up in the deep north, and she's with Bemidji 350 Rise, and also the producer of our show on Tuesday, Rock the Vote Native Style, here on AM 950 and across Turtle Island on Facebook Live. Welcome, Nancy.
Well, Miigwech, for having me. It's always an honor to be on your show and, you know, spread the knowledge and inform people of what's happening up here in the northern part of Minnesota. And, you know, there's got to be a quick shout out because we only have 18 days left to do the census. Mm-hmm. And we really need to do the census because, you know, when we count on our public health systems and, you know, our schools and, you know, representatives, this is how it matters, is when we show up and say we're here. And my family is here too, and we want to be represented, and we want to make sure that, you know, our communities are funded in the best way we know how, because without this funding, Robert, we fall short, and then, you know, people can't get the services they need. So I can't highly recommend people to visit the 2020census.gov website and get registered and do that today. We only have 18 days left. Wow. And it's really critical, you know, so...
I agree 100%. And then I think that Goose agrees too in the background.
Right. I'm actually at the office today, and it's kind of nice to be here. We got some coworkers up north. We got Nicole from our MN350 action team and a volunteer who has committed to coming all the way up here and working with her and our team here at Bemidji 350. Today at 2 to 4, we are having a Rock the Vote Native Style, kind of like a meet and greet in a voter registration. So today we're going to be wearing two hats. And so we're going to follow through with supporting our local candidates and some state candidates. And we have Rita Albright, our mayor, who is running for Senate District 5, mm-hmm. as one of our speakers. We have Don Purcell, 5A, Representative 5A, and he's an incumbent. And then we have Audrey Sayer, who's running for Bemidji City Council, Ward 1. And then we have Reed Olson, who is running for Beltrami County Commissioner as a speaker as well. So, we're going to show some support today and encourage our people to register to vote because, again, you know, just like the census, voting is our voice, and it brings mm-hmm. us to the table in many different ways.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
and it helps protect our water and our rights and, you know, economic equality, all those good things. And if we don't remind them that we're here, Robert, you know, they're going to forget about us again. And this is the most important time in history where we have to show up. We have to make a commitment to make a stand for ourselves. And if we're not at the table, we're what's being served. So, mm-hmm. again, vote and learn how to show up afterwards and build healthy relationships. So reach out to some of your nonprofits in your local areas that might be working on environmental and racial justice and give all the support you can. You can do it behind the scenes. You could do it on the front line. You could do it at the Capitol. You choose how you want to volunteer.
Exactly. It's everyone's civic duty, and we have to teach civics again in high schools because of what we see going around Turtle Island and things like that. What else are you working on? I know you guys are really doing great on Rock the Vote up there. You have a great crew of people. We should maybe just give those guys a quick shout out.
Yeah, we got Louisa Pasadoa. I might have, you know, not got that last name right, but she's out of Hibbing. And then we have Deborah Topping out of Fond du Lac. And then we got Joey Opelgaard-Peltier. He's out of Turtle Mountain, residing here in Bemidji. And then we have Christian Taylor Johnson, who is a descendant of Leech Lake. And then you got myself, Nancy Bolio, Minnesota Chippewa Tribe Leech Lake. So, yeah, we try to hire our own people so people are comfortable with us knocking on their door. And we actually discussed last night the very idea of getting our boots on the ground, because it's really hard to reach our relatives through social media and whatnot. So we feel we need to door knock and show up in a safe and social distance kind of way to make sure all of our relatives are counted. So this next week, that's what we'll be doing, Robert. We'll have our boots on the ground looking for our relatives. So when we see you, don't run and hide.
Exactly. And then we have something coming up. We have something coming up on Friday, and I think I'm coming up there too. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Right. So we just got word the other day that Trump, the president, will be swinging through our town in a quick way at the airport and in an airport hangar. So it's really just, it's really kind of feels like it's threatening in a way, because again, I'm going to say like you, Robert, it's the deep north and a lot of Republican people with hate in their heart. And we see Trump signs and flags, pickups with flags on them, and people gathering unmasked and defying the governor and defying our voices. And, you know, so I just understand they had a vote to get rid of one of the commissioners from Walsh administration. And stuff like that, one more reason we got to vote. And yeah, but anyway, he's in town on Friday. And so we're calling on all of our drums and our relatives to come up here on Friday the 18th and stand in solidarity. And let's show Trump that he's not welcome here. And, you know, I think we could do that in a good, powerful way with our songs and our prayers and just, you know, strength in numbers. You know, Robert, I'm glad you're coming up. And so we have no idea how it's going to turn out, because we've seen aggression already in this town, and this town doesn't seem to be very fair. And, you know, that's one reason why that we have to get back to that civic engagement. We have to build on numbers to, you know, show up in all these kind of different spaces, not just the Trump rally, but at the census and, you know, at the polls and at the town hall meetings and the city council meetings and even the tribal meetings. We got to start looking at our own tribal politics to see, you know, is our voice being represented at that level? Well, we know that's not true. And so we have to reflect back too, also on our own tribal government, because, you know, government to government, if one side is bad and one side is good, we're still not going to get nowhere, Robert.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And I know you're going to have a full day today, and I'm just really, 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 really excited to talk to you. Do you have anything else before I let you go?
No, I just want to make sure that people are, you know, following us, you know, on, you know, we're still here, Symposium and all these good shows that you have, Robert, because knowledge is power. And we want to make sure that people are showing up and using their voices and building on the solidarity, because when we stand together, we don't stand alone.
Wow. Great, great way to end this segment. Pini Gigi for being on. That's Nancy Bolio of Bemidji 350 Rise Coalition and the co-producer of Rock the Vote Native Style. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. My name is Wakunjahade, which means distant thunder, and it was given to me by Daga here. And Uncle Curtis, welcome, and Pini Gigi also for that beautiful name that you gave me.
Ha-ho, ha-ho, Pini Gigi, Tushka. My name is Moshke Hanazinga. I walk on a white cloud. My colonized name is Curtis West, and I got to say hello to my baby girl, Kim, every time I'm on this show. And I want to say ha-ho to all our family and relatives and friends in Four Directions. We pray all is well. You know, mask up, social distance, stay safe and blessed. And I want to give some prayer shout-outs to all them firefighters and all them people getting affected by that crazy wildfire in Oregon and California. So praying for your safety out there. So Matyushka here lets me do some things on his show, the birthday events and shout outs. You can help me out with the events because there hasn't been really too much going on from this lockdown. So I'm going to start off with some birthdays. A good friend of mine that was, my wife was a mentor to her, Brendan Knowles, our happy birthday to her today, and a Native brother that's listening in on us right now from up north. His name's Eddie Boyd. Another sister of ours, Dixie Holy Eagle. I want to say happy birthday to them. Mm-hmm. We got a relative down in Iowa. His name is Troy McKee. And I'm going to say happy birthday to him. We're going to give a shout out all the way to Winnebago, Nebraska for another one of our relatives. So we're going to say happy birthday to Sugar Daryl Fierro. So I'm going to say happy birthday to Daryl over there.
And I went to high school with Daryl.
I know. And he told me to say hello to you. Him and Augie were out golfing out at Mystic Lake yesterday. So were out there. So he's in town, but I didn't get a chance to see him. But another happy birthday shout out. A few of them here for relatives, too. And a friend of ours from Minneapolis, T-Boz LeDuc. I want to say happy birthday to T-Boz. And another one of relatives of ours up there in God's Country, Wisconsin, is Andrea McKee. And then we got a shout out to me and Tushke is Tushke down in Winnebago, Nebraska, too. It's Jason Bass's son, Deandra Webster. So we want to say happy birthday all the way to Winnebago, Nebraska.
Oh.
So we're going to start off with some other ones. The elders, we can't forget about them. I always say that elders are very, important to us, our culture and everything. So we can't never forget them. And check in on your elders when this pandemic and stuff's going on, see if they need anything. See if they need some pop or food or mm-hmm. cigarettes or something, check in on them, So we're going to start off with some elders here. And one important one that I wanted to say happy birthday to is our brother Leonard Peltier, who turned 76 years old today. And he's been falsely in prison for 40 years. And me and Tushke were talking about this earlier, that he's been in the record-setting political prisoner, of all time,
Yep,
40 years locked down for 40 years knocked down man out of his life,
That's 16,289 days.
My God. Holy smokes, yes. Man. Woo-hoo. Yeah, so another elder we're going to talk about, man. He's just getting used to being an elder. It's my brother Haina, Mark West. So he's an elder, So I guess, man. So he's getting used to it. So I told him settle down, Yeah, so anyway, another relative of ours, too, is I'm going to give a happy birthday shout out to Elvina Foss. That's Dexter and Ralph Yellow Thunder's mom. So she's an elite elder. And then another one is my nanny slash sister, Monica Cloud. And I'm going to shout out to Glenn White, Roy Garvin Jr., Joyce Tukrer, and I don't know who's that beeping is, but so we're going to give a shout out to our buddy again who's listening to us today. So I always got to give a shout out to Augie and give me information on something from the Red Lake Nation. Mm-hmm. So I want to give a shout out to Augie and his queen, and always want to give a shout out, much love and much respect to American Indian Movement, Clyde and Frank and Lisa and all the crew over there. So I want to give a shout out to the Ho-Chunk Nation. They're helping us get through this crisis with this pandemic, and their monetary and food and all that stuff helping out. So I want to say peenagigi to them. There's another thing, Tushke, we were talking about general counsel, because that's still, they say the general counsel is, it's usually around this time of September.
Right.
And so they're still on hold. They haven't decided on what they're going to do. They have a potential date of December 5th, but that's not etched in stone. So another thing we want to bring up, too, that I talked to one of our legislators, that COVID-19 relief fund that was available for $1,500, and if you didn't fill it out by now, they said that's not available right now. So hopefully that you got your relief fund. But they told me to mention, too, to the members that that $900, that per cap monthly, it's going to go till December 1st, and then they'll decide after that, So they're talking about that, and they got a few casinos opened up, but they're at 50% capacity, and told me to mention that the Toma Casino was closed until further notice. So, And the other thing that we got to bring up, too, is that this was Augie brought to all the Red Lake Nation from here. He said, September 15th, they're taking applications for that new housing over there at Minneapolis. And they said the governor to the Red Lake Embassy on Bloomington Avenue in Minneapolis. And you all probably know where that's at. So, anyway, Chuchke, why don't you help me out with a few events?
Well, hey, I appreciate it, Uncle Curtis. I want to first give a shout-out to everyone that's donating to us to keep us on the air on the Patreon. That's Patreon.com/Native Roots Radio Network. Really appreciate that. And I'll just talk a little bit about the network. And we have the symposium. Now it's back on live on Facebook and rebroadcast the next week on AM 950, but that'll be on Sundays at 7:15. And then, of course, we're doing Rock the Boat Native Style on Tuesdays, and Tuesdays from 2 to 3. And then we have Pilots Progressive Party, which is on 5 to 6. And then Native Roots Radio that you're listening to right now, 1 to 3. And again, all these are on Facebook Live, too. And people all across Turtle Island can watch us and check in and talk to our guests and hosts. And I just really appreciate everybody that's been supporting us through this rough time of COVID.
Oh, hey. So anyway, Chuchke, another important thing that we wanted to bring up too today is that it's very important to get that your census form filled out. You know, it's very important to get. We need that native vote, and we need your support. I heard the numbers were really low on census reports. I wish all you natives out there would go ahead and fill it out. It only takes a couple of minutes to fill out, you know. So the other thing I wanted to bring up on an event, too, is that I got a fundraiser, my birthday fundraiser. It's for the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Coalition. Yeah. And you can find all the information on my profile page, or you know, go on to Native Roots Radio. But and the other thing we want to bring up, remind the Ho-Chunk Nation to do, it's very important to vote for Trisha Zunker for Congress on November 3rd. Get out there and get to the polls. That's what we always ask for, you know. So we appreciate that.
Hey, Uncle Curtis, do you have a gaga or a native wisdom?
Yeah, I do. This one was just given to me recently. So this native wisdom, it says, don't be afraid to show your heart. It is not a sign of weakness, but a sign of strength. Let your spirit from your heart always shine.
Wow, that's beautiful. Pinigigi, Uncle Curtis.
I hope.
I would like to end with these thoughts. If you are listening to the show, you are the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I've been your host, Robert Pilot. The revolution is kicking into high gear, and I would like to thank all my listening audience, our sponsors, and especially our guests, which make this show. If you are listening to this show, you are the resistance. We're still here. We are the seventh generation. Free Leonard Peltier.